NASA 557, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Cruz.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
The Flight Safety Detectives is bringing on a new sponsor, Piston Powered, a power-by-the-hour program for owners of piston-powered aircraft that can stabilize the long-term cost of owning your airplane.
Well, hello, Todd.
Hello, John.
Well, here we at it again, and we have an interesting little segment here today. Greg's off flying someplace, and since you and I are both droners, I thought it would be appropriate we talk about some idiot that's been flying a drone where he shouldn't. So having said that, Todd, why don't you start it?
In January, a month before we did the show, we did an episode about an event where a firebombing aircraft, a specialized aircraft from Canada, was struck by a drone flown by a then unknown person. There was, as you can see from the video version of this, there was a hole punched into the leading edge of the aircraft, and it was grounded for several days. And this was one of the key aircraft fighting the wildfires around Los Angeles. Fast forward a few days, at the end of January, the Department of Justice announced that there was a person who pled guilty to recklessly operating a drone that crashed into and damaged a Super Scooper firefighting aircraft. This person, as it turns out, was a person of some substance. He was one of the creative people behind the Call of Duty video game franchise. And he's a 56-year-old gentleman. And again, you could read the more details about him in the documentation that we have attached to the show. And it turns out that this person flew it from a parking garage in Santa Monica. And according to the FBI, flew it about 1.5 miles toward the fire zone. And as you can see from the screen, and those of you who are watching the video, we have a graphic that shows the general outlines of the Palisades fire area where the firefighting aircraft are flying. And I drew a circle around the area where the drone took off from, 1.5 mile diameter circle. And as you can see, it touches on the southeast portion of this Palisades fire area near the Riviera Golf Course in Los Angeles. And the next graphic that you see will be a flight track from ADS-B Exchange that shows a flight track of this water bombing aircraft during the time that this happened. As you can see, it is around that same area that's within 1.5 miles of the parking garage. And you can also see that the loops go into the Pacific Ocean just off the coast. These fire bombers were picking up to 1,600 gallons of water at a time and doing multiple drops on that fire, trying to save houses and people from mayhem. And this aircraft was taken out of service for several days because of this. Now, before I go further, let me give it over to you, John. The insights you got from reading this this document where he pled guilty to this misdemeanor. By the way, he might be spending up to a year in behind bars because of this.
Well, I wish they had prosecuted him to the full extent instead of letting him off for fine, because I would suspect that his net worth is, it's private. You know, if you hit him online, his net worth is private, but it should... certainly seems like he just didn't bat an eyelash at paying $65,000 plus his attorney fees, which are probably going to be hefty. And it may be more. The wording is a little bit squirrely in the settlement, because it said that the repair and also reimbursing the Quebec government, and I don't know just what they're reimbursing for, loss of use or the full flight of bringing it down or whatever, but it's a very costly mistake. So this is a person of substance. He's a co-founder of a studio. He should have known better to let it get out of sight like that. What was his plans? Was he wanting to, you know, be a kid in the candy store and you get a picture of a fire? Or was he looking for it so that he could do something with that for a video game? We'll probably never know unless the video game pops up in the near future with a big fire in Los Angeles. But the sheer lack of common sense that was exercised in this event justifies description for somebody that spent his life in the film business and is very successful in business.
And so let me add a few things terrible. About the common sense aspects of this. I don't know if this person has a Part 107 license. And in fact, if you look up the person's name in the FAA database, you might not find anything because I tried. I didn't see anything. I tried looking up my own name. I know I have a Part 107 license, and it didn't come up either. That aside, some of the basic rules of the road for flying recreational drones or even Part 107 commercial drones is it has to be within your visual range at all times. And allegedly, according to the DOJ's statement, he flew this at least 1.5 miles away from his position. I have a drone roughly that same size, the same weight, in fact, 249 grams, just like the photograph we had from the previous show that showed the FBI evidence. And I could lose track of that thing well under 400 feet. So assuming that he had a connection, electronic connection with the drone at all times, the only way he can navigate that thing is looking through the camera of the drone. It's a great camera. You'll have a nice HD view on your monitor, on your phone, whatever you're using, but you don't have the ability to see all around. You don't have the awareness that you need to have being in that area. And from the flight track of the aircraft that day, it should have been fairly obvious to someone 1.5 miles away from this that there were aircraft flying in the area, and even more obvious that there was a fire in the area. So the common sense part of don't fly your drone where you can't see it, don't fly the drone in blatant violation of the regulations, and don't fly a drone when there's emergency activity going on with aircraft and helicopters, which was the case here.
Yeah, just typical. Put people up for a joyride, so to speak. Fortunately, it cost him some money that will get his attention. But I just think about you or I or a normal person who did that. We probably couldn't pay the fine, and we would be facing the year in prison, plus having the fine hanging over our head for some time. It's a sorry state of affairs. I'm glad they caught him. I'm glad it may prevent someone else from doing the same, because it's going to get some visibility. Hopefully in the future, we have more people that exercise caution when wanting to fly their drones around these type of events. But I'm sure they'll always be out there. People being people, especially with the number of drones that are being purchased every year, it's getting to be almost like a toy. People believe it's a toy, but it's not. It's far from that.
So Sherry, when I'm calling, I know that you offer a variety of different products because I have CFI insurance through you. What other insurance products do you have for individuals?
We have non-owned policies for those people that are going to flight school and they need to have supplemental coverage or the school's requiring it. In addition to that, non-owned CFI coverage where you're flying or instructing in a borrowed or rented aircraft. We also have, of course, owned aircraft policies, and in addition to you just using it for personal use, some incidental instructing as well. We would have to talk with you about the type of aircraft. We do insure some flying clubs, equity-owned flying clubs, construction policies. When you get that kit plane and you're building it in your garage, we have coverage for that as well. We also have coverage for experimental aircraft. And then finally, our policy does offer coverage in Mexico, the actual policy territory, but we also partner with another company, McAfee and Edwards, where they provide additional coverage for Mexico.
Why? Why do I need that?
Well, sometimes, depending on where you're flying into Mexico, they, for example, may want you to have a policy in Spanish.
Huh?
If you have an incident in Mexico, you want to make sure that you're covered.
Sure.
And that there's not going to be some kind of conflict. You know, you're in a foreign country, so it's good to do your research when you're flying down that way.
Now, I know a lot of people fly out to the Bahamas, or they may go out even to Costa Rica or Panama on their airplane. Do the policies cover that, or do I need a supplemental
policy? No, it does. It does cover the Bahamas. There are certain areas. Puerto Rico is covered. I believe Bermuda is not covered. There's certain areas that we would have to talk. Central America, Mexico is covered, but Central America would not be covered.
So the point being that if you are a client of Avemco, mm-hmm. I should pick up the phone and make sure that my airplane's covered if I fly to someplace outside the United States.
Well, and the great thing about our website also is the policy is actually printed on our website. It's 10 pages. If you go visit our website, if you're insured with us or not, you could go and see what the coverage offers. Mm-hmm. Very last page of the policy booklet is a territory map.
Oh, great.
Super easy to understand. It tells you what longitude, latitude lines, and shows actually a picture. So you could actually go there, and of course you can always call us.
And a couple of things about this. First, how does this fit in with aviation as it's being done right now? We've covered many events, and we know from our professional experiences many other events where it was clear that the people involved in an incident or accident were people of means who were doing things that were unwise. Now, whether they did so out of arrogance, out of laziness, or whatever, the fact is, the upshot of it is, if you have something where you have some sort of civil fine and you happen to be a well-off person, a person of means, it's not going to affect your lifestyle. If you are doing something, let's just say, a little bit outside of the rules in your beginning of your career, or you are like most people in that you have a comfortable life, but you're going to be in serious financial hurt if you have to pay a $50,000 fine or can't work because you've been fired from your job, you have to think ahead. Is this something worth doing? Is this worth whatever I'm getting out of this? I don't know why this person is flying the drone, whether it's for the thrills or for posting things online. It's hard for me to believe that a person of means like this was doing this for the money. It's also hard for me to believe that a person who is apparently that successful in business and in life didn't have to understand the regulations or the laws to know that what he was doing was potentially dangerous. The other thing that I want to talk about is there are a lot of people, like you said, flying drones. I don't think it's possible to know how many people and how many drones are out there. For instance, although you might have to register drones of a certain size, I think over 249 grams, you're required to register them. The registration process is such where the registration isn't for the actual drone itself, as you would have in an aircraft. It's for whoever is managing that drone. So you can have a person who has one registration. They have 50 drones out there. You can have a person who does not register it at all, because you can build a drone from scratch or from various hobby kits that are out there, and it'll be a perfectly working drone, but there's no requirement to register that drone. So given the installed base of drones that have been purchased over the years, given the number of people who have actually registered drones, which is only a fraction of those who are flying drones, bottom line, the government, police, and you or I, John, have no idea potentially how many drones are out there.
No, there was, if you go on eBay and look at how many drones for sale, a huge number. I didn't count them because there was far too many to count, but it's a very large number. So they're out there.
Even if this person or a person who is a Part 107 operator like myself, even if you've gone through the process of doing that, you can get a Part 107 license without having any experience flying a drone. You can get a Part 107 license without owning a drone. It is basically a written test a test of the rules, sort of like a driver's test with no driving component to it, nor any component of having to have a car to drive. It's great to have a license. It is an educational process. I highly recommend that people do so. But unlike myself flying my Cessna, there's much less oversight as to when you're flying and how you're flying it. For example, it's hard for me to go out in my garage, jump into a Cessna and fly. I need to go to an airport. If I'm at an airport, at the very least, I'll have to deal with the airport operator, air traffic control, if it's a controlled airport, and there are certain processes one has to go through. There is no process to go fly a drone. I can dust mine off. I did so not too long ago after having it in the closet for over a year, charged it with the batteries and flew it. Didn't have to tell anybody. Of course, I had enough common sense to know that I shouldn't fly it over an airport or over 400 feet, that sort of thing. But still, this is a very easy technology to use and a very easy technology to abuse.
Without a doubt. Well, to everybody else listening that has a drone, please don't do what this guy did. Please use it responsibly. You have to keep it within your line of sight. And as you mentioned, Todd, 400 feet, you can hardly see these things. If you let it get away from you on its way to 400 feet, you will be hard pressed to find it back in your vision, get it back into your vision. If you look away and then come back, it's very, very difficult. I've been an observer for people that fly drones sometimes, and boy, you've got to keep your eye on it, or it's easy to lose. And I'm sure he's trying to do both two things, trying to look at it through the screen and keep it in his vision. Can't do that.
For example, there's a park near the edge of Boston called Millennium Park, and it was a relatively empty space because around that park was undeveloped land, and so it was great to fly there. Even though I was familiar with this area, even though I'd flown there several times, if I didn't have the drone in sight and I had to navigate through the lens of the drone, sometimes I would get confused as to where I was relative to where I was standing. I've driven around that area a whole lot. I was familiar with the area, but I don't fly around that area at 200 feet. So from the drone's point of view, the landmarks that are very familiar to me when I'm on the ground looked unfamiliar in the air.
Well, okay, Todd, I think we've made our point.
I think so. I had my second to last word all throughout this show today.
Okay, so I'll do what I always do. If you're going to go flying, do some pre-planning. And that includes with the drone. You can plan what you're going to do with your drone. When you get out to the airport, do the planning session all over again so that make sure they agree, nothing has changed. When you get out to your airplane, do a good pre-flight. I just sat day before yesterday and watched somebody do a pre-flight, and they did a pretty good job. I wasn't expecting that. I thought I was going to see another general aviation pilot just do it once over lightly. Wasn't the case. And this particular individual did a very thorough inspection and focused. So I was very amazed to see that and pleased. And after you get in the air, put that head on the swivel because it's still crowded as hell out there. And you want to have your, you don't want to be part of someone else's accident. So keep your head on the swivel, be alert to what's going on around you, and please, please fly safely.
Thank you for checking out our show. We really value our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you and how much you like it. So please give us 5 stars in your podcast platform.
We want to keep in contact with you. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're on YouTube, we're really working on growing the channel, and it helps if you all send in comments. Please do that, and we read all the comments.
And be sure to subscribe. Remember, if you're in the market for aviation insurance, you can save 5% with Avemco just by mentioning our show. Visit them at www.avemco.com. That's it for this episode of the Flight Safety Detective. Until the next episode, fly safe.